The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Now we're going to go to the Gulf and the Middle East, and joining me now is Chase Udgermeyer. He is currently the chairman of the Qatar America Institute, which aims to increase the understanding of the important Qatari-American relationship in security, education, and energy. From 2004 to the end of 2007, he served as U.S. ambassador to Qatar on the appointment of George W. Bush. He's also held positions at all four levels of government, local, state, national, and international, over a period of more than three decades, with work in journalism, academia, and business as well. And he's like me, he's from New Jersey, so he can't be that bad. Anyway, we're looking forward to getting his perspective today. Mr. Ambassador, good to have you with us, sir.
Good morning, John. Good to be with you and your listeners.
Mr. Ambassador, let's go right to Iran and the Gulf. Tensions flaring. Another couple of tankers hit. The Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, coming on the talk shows over the weekend. Fox, I believe he was on Fox News, and I have a clip also that I'm going to play to get your comment on. But Pompeo leaving no doubt that the Iranians were behind this, and not rogue, but he's saying most likely their military. But a lot of this stuff that comes out of the UAE, I just don't believe any of it because they have a history of lying. And so everything is suspect to me. What is your take on what is going on right now with these UAE tankers in the Straits of Hormuz, sir?
Well, I don't have access nowadays to the latest intelligence. So, like you, depend upon what we hear from authorities. I do tend to believe our intelligence, and the videos seem to be pretty persuasive that some elements of Iran were involved in these attacks. But there still are unanswered questions. One question is why? Why would Iran or part of Iran want to provoke the Gulf nations and their ally, the United States? And the second, which is pretty pertinent, is which part of Iran might have done this? That is, there is the Revolutionary Guard entity, which is a state within a state, and it's quite possible, this is purely speculation, that they conducted this not so much to provoke the United States and the Gulf nations, but to provoke the central authority in Tehran for some internal political reason that's beyond me.
Sir, when you say that the Revolutionary Guard is a state within a state, Mr. Ambassador, can you elaborate on that? What do you mean by that?
Just that the central authorities in Tehran have never been able to exercise control over the Revolutionary Guards, who have done many outrages over the years. And as I indicate, it may be that they are trying to stiffen the spine of the central authorities, and it may be that they find it to their advantage somehow to create that kind of pressure.
So, Mr. Ambassador, what you're saying is that these are military commanders, military authority, that part of the Iran's Revolutionary Guard military operation, that would be making decisions or making calls potentially without the direct orders of the central government. Is that what I'm understanding? Potentially?
Yes, and this points out how in the Middle East it's very, very seldom a choice between good guys and bad guys, but between bad guys and worse guys. So the bad guys are in the government bureaus in Tehran, and the worst guys are the Revolutionary Guards.
Everybody's concerned now about the rhetoric getting ratcheted up. That's never a good thing in this tinderbox situation there. So what do you think the right approach for the United States is right now, sir?
Diplomacy to the degree that can do anything. When I say that, there's now about 40 years of history that negotiating with Tehran doesn't lead to anything. They're very clever bargainers, and their aim is to do two things. One is to avoid conflict, but secondly is to somehow get sanctions relief because their internal economy is in such a terrible condition, and that can't be good for the long-term health of the regime. But for our point of view, we don't need another war, and we certainly don't need to take on a major state, which is Iran.
Right, and you would agree with me that the statement that Tom Cotton made, the senator from Arkansas, that, well, we could just drop a couple bombs on him and that would be the end of it. Do you agree with my assessment that that was one of the more asinine statements made in Congress, sir, in a long time?
Well, it's hard to imagine that a couple of bombs, if that's what the senator said, would do the job. Even nuclear bombs, but that's not an option, and I'm sure that's not what he was considering.
Well, because Iran has a thousand-year civilization, and it's the biggest country by far in the Middle East. So I some of these things that comes out of the some of these senators that are rattling the sabers is just beyond me. All right, so the U.S. considering military option. Meantime, the Saudi crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, saying that he doesn't want regional war, but yet he's trying to get these arms sales through the U.S. so that they can keep bombing, school buses in Yemen or something. Break that down for us.
Well, there are all these different moving parts. You're quite right that there is a major arms deal now pending before the Congress. The Congress has been very, very critical of Saudi Arabia, particularly because of its tactics in Yemen, and is nervous to concerned about the degree that American arms sales might continue these kind of predations against innocent civilians in Yemen. So we have a great strategic relationship with Saudi Arabia. It must be maintained. Saudi Arabia has a need for arms, and we have been supplying arms to Saudi Arabia for decades. But it's complicated by just the Yemeni situation I described. And now comes these incidents in the Gulf, which raise the question as to whether there is a growing military confrontation in which the Saudis would be our allies in any confrontation with Iran.
You're on the John Fredericks Radio Network. We're with former ambassador of Qatar for the George W. Bush administration, Chase Untermyer. He's also now the chairman of the Qatar America Institute. Mr. Ambassador, a private tanker owner, a Japanese tanker, this is the stuff that, yeah, look, ever since WMDs and the second war in Iraq, I mean, I think Americans should be suspect of this stuff because a lot of people believe that, and right now it's still not proven that there were ever, Saddam Hussein never had any WMDs. So that's why people are looking at this now in a different way than they did maybe prior to that. But you got this Japanese tanker owner saying that the U.S. information on the attacks is false. So you got our intel saying one thing. You got some independent tanker owner from Japan saying, nope, that's false, saying another thing. You want to believe our intel, but then a lot of people believe them with WMDs. They never existed, ever. So do you see the dilemma that a lot of American people have now?
Yes, definitely. And as Ronald Reagan always liked to quote, the attitude toward intelligence agencies, plural, is trust but verify. And our allies have every right to want verification of our intel on this right. incident and any other that might.
But I think your analysis, because a lot of people are asking, like, why would the Iranian government do this? I mean, why would they be provoking us and things of that nature? But I think when you take your explanation of the Revolutionary Guard, a state within a state, and they basically make their own decisions, and I think you use the word stiff in the spine of the central authorities, that's a plausible explanation to this, sir, no doubt about it.
Okay, well, it's not so much an explanation as a speculation, but because who knows what happens inside those palaces in Tehran or the headquarters of the Revolutionary Guard. I certainly don't.
in the summit for what to do with Israel, and when they had the Gulf summit, the Mohammed bin Salman, the Saudis, invited the Qatar of the Emir of Qatar there, Emir Al Thani. He invited him there. He sent his deputy prime minister in his stay, which I think was the right thing to do. Was that was a couple weeks ago? Is that an indication that the hard line that the Saudis are taking on Qatar might be melting? Is that a first step towards maybe finding a way to get out of this ridiculous blockade which is going on now? I guess we'll be going into finishing year three. It's been a disaster for the Saudis. Are they looking for a way out?
Well, it was an encouraging sign. We have to take it for the base value of what it is, namely a conference to discuss a common front against Iran, and Qatar should have been involved in that as a major player, as well as the host to the major U.S. air base in the region. I'd like to think that it was also a step away from the blockade. I've always thought that because the blockade has been such an embarrassment to the Saudis and Emiratis, in that it failed to accomplish any goal that I can tell, that they've never wanted to have a formal end to it. That would be too embarrassing. So it would happen over time. It would happen in little measures, little ways, loosening here, permitting something to happen elsewhere. And maybe, that's all we can say, maybe this was the first step in that direction.
A baby step, no doubt, but it has to be a step. Now we understand that the Emir of Qatar is coming back to the White House. This is going to be the third trip for the Emir of Qatar coming to Washington to visit with the Trump administration. I think I read this was on July 10th or something. So the Emir of Qatar would have been in Washington meeting with the president now three times in a half-year period, which is more than UAE or Saudi or anyone else. Why was this meeting put together, and can we take anything from it? Is there a message here?
It's a good sign of the relationship between Qatar and the United States. As I mentioned, they host American armed forces, primarily the U.S. Air Force, at the big Al Udeid base, which is the biggest asset we have in the entire Middle East region, and it is also the location of the forward headquarters of the U.S. Central Command. So there is every reason for the two heads of state to confer on the situation in the Gulf and also what to do about these matters going forward. I consider it a normal sort of exchange. It may be one or two visits more than other leaders get, but this is in great contrast, I have to say, to the way it was when George W. Bush was president, and there was a great deal of tension between Qatar and the United States, primarily over the broadcasts of Al Jazeera, and the heads of state at that time never met. I'm glad to say the relationship survived that rather frosty period.
Look, I mean, I've been on Al Jazeera many times. They are who they are. It seems to be independent. They never tell anybody what to say that I can take. Certainly the 50 times I've been on it, I get a topic. Nobody tells me what my line should be. And I've been on both English, which is very liberal, and the Arabic station many times. Of course, Arabic, I don't really understand. It's got to be translated back. But, I mean, is that still on Capitol Hill a bone of contention? Because it really doesn't affect us here in the U.S. They don't even have an English. They have an English channel, but it's based in the United Kingdom. Like, there's no U.S. outlet here. Is that still something that people are concerned about, or what?
Al Jazeera's broadcasts absolutely concern the Saudis and Emiratis. It's the reason why unplugging Al Jazeera is their number one demand to loosen the blockade. I don't think that's ever going to happen, and predictably never would happen, but that indicates how sensitive they are to having Al Jazeera lift the flap of the tent and look inside what's going on in their countries, which they don't like.
Right, because, I mean, basically what Al Jazeera does is it gives people insight. I mean, it is an independent network, and it gives people insight into what is going on in the UAE and the Saudis. And so, of course, they don't like that, obviously, as you said. So that's been a bone of contention, especially when you look at the Saudis, like, thinking about executing teenagers. Now, that I know they decided not to do that, but those are the things that, you know, U.S. looks at that and says, you know, boy, that's an awfully extreme regime. And I think that those are kind of the things that they want to keep hidden. I'm going to go to a couple of clips here I want to get your comments on, if I may, Mr. Ambassador. Let's go, Kara, let's go to cut seven. This is Secretary of State Mike Pompeo yesterday saying, look, there's no doubt Iran is behind the attack on the commercial ships. He said this yesterday on Fox News Sunday. Cut seven.
Well, Chris, it's unmistakable what happened here. These were attacks by the Islamic Republic of Iran on commercial shipping on the freedom of navigation with a clear intent to deny transit through the strait. This was on the Gulf of Oman side of the Strait of Hormuz. There's no doubt. The intelligence community has lots of data, lots of evidence. The world will come to see much of it, but the American people should rest assured we have high confidence with respect to who conducted these attacks, as well as a half a dozen other attacks throughout the world over the past 40 days.
So, I mean, that's a pretty demonstrative statement on TV by the Secretary of State. Agree?
Once again, I've on balance trust the professionalism, the sources, and the analysis of our intelligence community. So I tend to believe what they say, but you have to verify it. And that was, and you also have to verify it in the context of what policy implications there may be. Henry Kissinger wrote 10 years before we had the dust-up over weapons of mass destruction in Iraq that intelligence tends to follow political indications from the White House. Now, it shouldn't, but that was his conclusion over the years, and it certainly was validated what happened in 2003, in which there was a great willingness to believe what turned out to be flawed and incomplete intelligence. So we have to, in this instance, ask ourselves and ask our leaders, just what do you want to do in Iran? And is the intelligence pointing in that direction in a way that it wouldn't be or shouldn't be in a more neutral examination of the problem?
The Senate, Mr. Ambassador, on Thursday rejected a bid by Kentucky Senator Rand Paul to block arms sales to Qatar and Bahrain, even as senators we talked about earlier are bracing for the bigger battle next week over the proposed weapons sale to the Saudis and the UAE. The vote Thursday means the proposed sales, I think it was like $3 billion in Apache helicopter package for Qatar and $750 million in ammo for Bahrain for their F-16 fleet. That can go forward. Senators voted 56-43 against the Rand Paul. Why would senators be opposed to giving arms to Qatar when that's our biggest base there? Like, why would 43 senators vote no? I mean, that is our biggest base in the Gulf. That is our seat of operations. And they're basically looking for helicopters in order to defend themselves. And we got 43 senators voting no. Why?
Well, I can't explain even one senator's vote, let alone 43. We do know that Senator Paul has a consistent record as a libertarian, looking at foreign affairs, against arms sales, against American entanglement and involvement elsewhere. And I'm speculating again here that he may just feel his motion is necessary to be more even-handed in the sense that others of his colleagues are trying to block arms sales to Saudi Arabia, and he would want a more consistent view. That's all I can say, because I haven't talked to the man. But I certainly underscore your point that if we are concerned about Iran, then we, the forces on the south side of the Persian-Arabian Gulf, along with the Saudis and the Qataris and the Emiratis, need to be united, and they need to be supported.
Okay, we're on the same page on that. I mean, we have the biggest base there. The whole thing to me is just ridiculous. Like, I'm suspect of a lot of things that are going on in Yemen and our relationship with the Saudis. I'm suspect of what's happening in the Gulf of Hormuz. But what I'm not suspect of is the fact that we have this huge base in Qatar, and that's not speculative. That's there. And so it's the life of me. I don't know why we would not. I mean, it just doesn't make some of this stuff doesn't make any sense. That's why we have to get you on to
break
it down.
And I don't think it'll happen in the end.
Really appreciate
in the end, we will sell arms to all our allies in the Gulf who are opposing Iran.
As we should, right? Because that's the major
yes,
thing. Just a final thing.
It's a very difficult and dangerous place. And yes, in a perfect world, you wouldn't want to inject weapons of death into such a sensitive area. But that is not our choice. We have to do it.
Final thing, Iran's saying that they're not going to abide by the deal that was made, the Iranian deal. They're going to start going their own way on it. Well, we've already pulled out of that deal. So why would Iran be continuing to adhere to the stipulations of a deal that the U.S. has already pulled out on? I'm not getting that either.
Well, when the U.S. pulled out of the Iran nuclear arrangement, there still were other parties, primarily the Europeans, the Russians, and the Chinese, who remained committed to it. And Iran saw a value in pretending to be the innocent, wronged party, adjusting its halo just right, in order to maintain trade relations with those countries, if nothing else. Remember, their economic situation, Iran, is pretty critical, and our economic sanctions are biting. Therefore, to the degree that Iran thought that by adhering to the terms of the agreement, even after the U.S. withdrawal, might help them in making that argument to our allies or partners in the agreement. But, you know, from the beginning, all of this depended upon the willingness of Iran to live by its agreement. And that's always been in doubt because they are very clever in terms of the way they view their opponents and the rest of the world. It seemed to me inevitable that at some point Iran is going to move toward a nuclear weapon. This is now the moment they've decided to abandon, if you will, the precepts of that agreement and move ahead just like they always would. And let me say, just once again, out of speculation, that I think a perfectly democratic, pro-Western Iran would want nuclear weapons, just because, as you say, they are an ancient country that has always been dominant in that part of the world. Being a nuclear power is the ticket into the big boys' club of the world. They, the Iranians, proud Persians, regardless of regime, would want to see themselves in that category. So eventually, I do believe Iran will have nuclear weapons, and that is regrettable, but that is where they're headed.
We're going to end on that speculation, sad one, if I may say. But thank you. Thank you so much, Ambassador Chase Untermyer. He was the ambassador to Qatar under the George W. Bush administration, 2004 to 2007. He's now the chairman of the Qatar American Institute. Thank you, Mr. Ambassador. We'll have you on again next week. Always love your perspective, sir. Thank you so much.
All right, Facebook has finally announced its much-anticipated cryptocurrency project. It's called the Libra Association. It's not just Facebook. It's organizations around the world. We've got payment providers like Visa and MasterCard involved. We've got service companies like Uber and Lyft. We've even got a cryptocurrency company called Coinbase where you can buy and sell things like Bitcoin. You can see the price of Bitcoin has actually gone up lately because people are pretty excited about what this means for cryptocurrency around the world. Now, Facebook itself is building what's called a wallet. It's where you can store this Libra currency that they're introducing. Now, Libra is pegged to other currencies, so when you're buying it, its price is going to pretty closely mirror other currencies around the world. But Facebook's wallet is going to be included in Messenger and WhatsApp, so you can spend this and send it to people pretty easily. Now, going forward, Facebook says they want a lot more organizations involved in this thing. They're trying to get buy-in from companies around the world and from people who are going to be able to make this easier to use and more versatile. On top of that, you know, I think you're going to see that this is a big moment for cryptocurrencies. Bitcoin so far has had its moments, but it's still somewhat relegated to people who are really big advocates of cryptocurrency. Whereas this is meant to mainstream it. This is meant to bring it to your smartphone, make it easy to use, easy to spend, easy to send to your friends and family, no matter where they are. And Facebook says even make it easy for people who have almost no access to banking to be able to move currencies, to buy things, even for people like refugees who might be displaced. So it's going to be a really exciting thing to watch. I think there's going to be a lot of skepticism around it, particularly with Facebook. But it's a big moment for the future of digital currency.
In the USSR. 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says that he wants to build a global coalition against Iran during urgent consultations in the Middle East. The last week has seen the United States pull back from the brink of a military strike on Iran. Speaking to reporters Sunday before leaving Washington, Pompeo says his first stop is Saudi Arabia, followed by the United Arab Emirates. Both U.S. allies work to counter Iran's influence in the region. Violence has flared again in the Indiana city where Democratic presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg is mayor. The St. Joseph County Metro Homicide Unit says that one man has died. 10 other people were wounded by gunshots early Sunday in South Bend. County police assisted in controlling a crowd of more than 100 angry citizens who gathered at a hospital after the shooting. Tens of thousands of people have attended an election night celebration after a repeated vote in Istanbul made a candidate to mayor-elect of Turkey's largest city. This is SRN News.
Maybe you'd like to know what exactly Relief Factor is. It was created by doctors. It's a 100% drug-free supplement with four key ingredients that simply help your own body deal with the natural inflammatory response that it has. It's easy to swallow, four little capsules in each packet, like the packet that I carry with me at all times. Three packets a day for a week, then two packets a day for 2 weeks, and I have just described the three-week quick start. And you will know in 3 weeks, that's the beauty of it, whether it works. They don't drag you on. That costs just $19.95. There's a very good chance that a very serious percentage of my listeners suffer from some sort of muscular or joint pain. You should try this for $19.95. That's all you can lose. If it works, they will send it to you automatically. If it doesn't work, tell them not to send any shipments. And it's as simple as that. It is all at ReliefFactor.com. I've been using it for years now. Relief Factor.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to
lose. Get a two-pack of MyPillow's premiums for $69.98. That's only $34.99 per pillow, which is the lowest price ever offered on radio or TV. This offer is only available at MyPillow.com or call 800-950-9024. Use promo code WBOB.
For the best night's sleep in the whole wide world, visit MyPillow.com.
Hi, it's Mac with Baker Glass. If you're having trouble finding a clear option for that new shower enclosure or a replacement for that fog glass, then call the Baker Boys or find us at BakerGlassInc.com. That's BakerGlassInc.com. Baker Glass, no one treats you better. Hi, this is Mac with Baker Glass, where we use our more than 32 years of experience to provide a complete glass service to all of our customers and a clear choice for you. See for yourself at BakerGlassInc.com. That's BakerGlassInc.com. Baker Glass, no one treats you better.
Tune in to AM 600 every Saturday morning for the Captain Vic Tyson Still Just Fishing Show, sponsored by Frontline Insurance. Find out where those fish are, what they're biting, and how to get them in the boat. Get the latest fishing info on tides, weather, and new products, and much more from the Sultan of the St. John's, Captain Vic Tyson. Start your weekend right. Tune in to the Captain Vic Tyson Still Just Fishing Show, Saturday mornings from 6 till 8, right here on AM 600 WBOB. Listen online or get the podcast at WBOB.com.
They don't call him the commander of common sense for nothing.
I'm not a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican National Committee, the Democrat National Committee, any campaign or anybody else. So I'm going to call it like I see it.
Who got out of the wrong side of the bed this morning?
Make sure to get your big boy pants on. No crybaby diapers.
There's no crying in baseball.
Here on the John Frederick Show.
Joining us now, Dr. Duane Hennen. He is a Republican. You can follow him on Twitter, at Dr. D. Hennen, and he's running for Congress in Ohio's 13th District against Tim Ryan, who's running for president, who didn't make any of the debates. But he's also the guy that challenged Fancy Nancy Pelosi a couple years back to no avail. Dr. Hennen with us now. Good to have you with us, Doc.
Yeah, thank you very much, John. Good to be with you.
So I love the fact that you're running for Congress in Tim Ryan's district, although it's an uphill battle. You got to keep him honest. And I remember Michelle Bachmann. I was telling this story the other day. Michelle Bachmann ran for president in 2012, and I backed her campaign early before Newt got in. As soon as Newt got in, I went with him. But she ran for president, and she spent months running around Iowa, New Hampshire, neglecting her district. She was never there. And that was a very Republican district. She had a Democratic challenger that year for Congress, a liberal, that came within 150 votes of beating her, and then she retired because she didn't want to go through that again. So there is a risk here for Tim Ryan when you're a congressman with zero chance of being the nominee and you're never in the district and you're not paying attention to your constituents. There is a backlash. Could you possibly take advantage of that, Dwayne?
I think we can. I think the thing with Tim Ryan, the Vindicator, one of our local papers out of Youngstown, pointed this out a few weeks back, and I think I tweeted it out, was the fact that he's missed a third of the votes. I mean, really, he's not here for the district, whether he's running for president or not. So it's not a big change. We don't really see him around here. When he is in the district, he'll maybe throw a party or something for his friends, but that's about it. So, I mean, that's one of the biggest complaints of people here, everyone I talk to, is that he just does nothing for them. So, I think we can take advantage of it, but I think we're just pointing out the facts of everyday life here that, hey, he's just not in the district. He really just doesn't care.
What is it, Dwayne, that inspired you to run for Congress, especially in this uphill battle?
I've been watching this, and it's like really in 16, it got a little closer. In 18, it got a lot closer with Chris DiPizzo. He got like 39.1% of the vote. So it's still, good ways to go. But I think right now, there is a huge Trump factor in all this. And I've been watching with some of the biggest things, with some of the things Tim was saying, like with the abortion issues, just kind of put me over the top. I'm a former pastor, and I just said, enough's enough. Someone's got to stand up and fight this. Because, if it was his way, we'd be the same way. Like as New York, right here in Ohio, and New York, Ohio is like totally different than New York. Right. We did pass that heartbeat bill, so I think it resonates with the people. Tim is a quote unquote Catholic person, and he just doesn't seem to follow any of the what he used to stand up for. He used to be pro life. He used to be pro NRA. Now he is just against both of them. So I think and those are two big issues here in our district. People are definitely, for the Second Amendment. They're for their personal rights. And most people, on average, do not go the extremes of abortion like they've pushed it nowadays.
All right. If you want more information, you can go to the website, Hennen, the number 4, Ohio2020.com, HennenForOhio.com. Now, this district, District 13 in Ohio, give our national audience here, Dwayne, a sense of what the boundaries are, where it is, and is a district Democrat plus 8 plus 10, how much?
We cover quite a wide area. We've got the Youngstown Warren area. We go down a little bit into Stark County, which would be like the Alliance, Ohio area. We go over into Akron. Akron is probably about 30% of our vote. And then we go up to like Cuyahoga Falls and Portage County. This has traditionally been pretty much a Democrat area for quite a few years, actually a couple decades with Tim Ryan by himself. The thing that we've seen, though, is like, with Tim Ryan, ever since he's got in, and even slightly before that, Jim Trafficant was in, and it was just a steady decline. We had a decline in jobs. We have a decline in population. The only thing that's been on the rise is the drug addiction. So, that's one of the issues that we have to fight for here in Ohio is the drug addiction, the opioid crisis. But we also got to get some employers back in the area. GM's pulled out, Delphi pulled out, and that's all been under Tim. And Tim wants to kind of point the finger at Trump and say, hey, Trump's done all this. Well, it's been going on for years. We've watched it here go on for years. And it wasn't Trump. Everything, you look at the numbers across the United States, everything Trump's done's worked. The only places that it doesn't work is places like this where you got someone that's trying to fight it from working. Another thing we really got to do in Ohio, and this is going to be Ohio having to do it for themselves, is we need to become a right to work state. Every state that's not just seems like it just doesn't work. And I think that's where we're falling apart. Employers don't want to come here because of that. So I think we've got some issues here in the state that we need to take care of. But we also got to have someone that's going to support our president. You know, if we're going to go in, and not support our president, how much are we going to accomplish in our area? And that's in our primary, I'm going up against another guy that's an anti-Trumper. So, in the Republican Party, he actually ran as Democrat before. He's now Republican, trying to, play a Republican. So I've got to, go through that battle first. But, ultimately it'll be Tim Ryan. So, we're kind of focusing on both at the same time right now.
Well, look, there's a lot of fake people out there running for Congress that were never Trumpers, and now they want to put they want to put on the cloak. In 2016, if you look at your district, what did Tim Ryan win by? Like, what was his percentage, assuming that he had opposition?
Yeah, I think in 2016, let me think back then. I don't have the papers in front of me, but I know it was, I believe he had... I think if the Republican that ran at that time had like about 27%, I believe. So Tim Ryan won by a huge margin. Chris DePizzo brought it up where he was like 39%. I think we can go further than that. I think we can actually knock it over the top this time. There's a lot of Democrats coming into the offices wanting to register as Republicans to get into the game. A lot of Democrats are just getting unsatisfied. They're unsatisfied just like the rest of us.
Right.
You do have some Democrats that, hey, they're just going to vote Democrat no matter what you do. Doesn't matter who the candidate is. They're not looking at the candidate's issues. They're saying, hey, we're Democrat, we're voting Democrat. So, that's the battle you always have. And that's one you just got to take. Hey, there's a certain percentage I'm just not going to get. But I think we stand a pretty good chance this time. I mean, it's just the issues are changing. In our uphill battle, well, right now you got someone that used to be a lot of people kind of considered Tim Ryan conservative a little bit when he first started. Now he is not. He's just totally changed course, and he's just right up there with Pelosi, right up there with Chuck Schumer, and just obstructing Trump and everything he does. And that doesn't resonate well with people. When they see, hey, we could be doing better, and we're not because of this, it just doesn't suit well, for the average person in our district.
We're with Dwayne Head, and he's running for Congress in Ohio's 13th district. That's represented right now by Tim Ryan, who's running for president. It is a solidly Democratic district right now, but it's important we get strong Trump candidates on the ballot to drive Trump turnout in the 3rd district to win Ohio. So Dwayne Hennon, one of those disruptors that we're having on in our disruptor segment. Dwayne, I've got a caller from Virginia that knows a little bit about your district and about Adelphi, because he's the head of the Adelphi Pension Fund. I've got Den Black on the line from Chesapeake, Virginia. Den, you're on the line with GOP congressional candidate Dwayne Hennon.
Yes, Dwayne, it's a pleasure to hear that you're going to go after the big dog out there, Mr. Timmy Ryan. And as John mentioned, I'm the chairperson of the Delphi Salaried Retirees Association, and I'm quite sure you must be aware that there's several thousands of Delphi people that would be likely to be voting for you because of the pension theft that we've endured out there in the Youngstown, Warren, Ohio district. Do you have contacts with those people? I have them all, and we certainly would be pleased to provide you with that group of people so that you can be sure who's in that potential voting block for you.
Yeah, I do have contact with a lot of them. I probably don't have the whole list. So, yeah, if you could get me the list, I would contact each one of them personally. My dad worked at Delphi, so, it's he actually got out before it was too late, so to speak. So, I mean, he actually retired, still has his pension and whatnot. Things have been cut over the years a little bit, but
you mean he got out when it was still General Motors?
Yes, correct. It was like I think he was the last one, last group that got out when they was still under GM. So that kind of saved him a little bit.
1999, yeah. That was okay, yeah. When Delphi was created, and what a ride it's been. But it really went downhill, as you know. Then Dwayne, once the Auto Task Force got involved. And needlessly, and I will not mince words, stole the earned Delphi salary pensions. And we're coming down the home stretch on the litigation of that as we speak. But I will stay in touch with you and also provide you with a contact list of literally hundreds, if not thousands, of people in your district that you need to stay in contact with. And believe me, I know Mr. Tim Ryan very well. And early on, he was out there as a politician advocating on our behalf. But you know what? He's forgotten about us a long time ago.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And that's what he does. I mean, he's there for the photo ops. And that, you know, if it looks like something's good, he'll be there. When it gets bad, he just seems to stay away and just not really want to get in the game and fight. And unfortunately, we need, nowadays especially, we need politicians that are going to stand up and fight for the people, not fight for themselves, not worry about, he just was tweeting out about some Planned Parenthood last night, and he's more worried about the campaign contributions than anything. And if it's, hey, some of it's not going to be given, you know what, those Delphi people that lost their pensions, they really can't give to them right now because they can't afford to.
You got that right. It's all about Timmy when it comes to Timmy, though. I can tell you that for sure, as you well know. It's all about Timmy.
Absolutely.
Timmy first, not America first. Not America first.
Oh, you bet.
Timmy first.
We need all the politicians to be America first, and there's far too many that aren't. Far too many who are just in there for the political game, just in there for a political career. And I'm not looking for a political career. I'm not looking to come in and take over 10th position and stay there for the next 30 years because I don't want that for 30 years. but, you know, we need some change in America, and it starts by getting some of these older people out that have been in there for, you know, decades now and take over and just, get the power back into the people and get some things changed that need change. Get people that are actually going to work with Trump because, you know what, in 2020, whether Democrats like to hear this or not, whether Tim likes to hear it or not, Trump will win. And we're going to take the House back, and and we're going to keep the Senate, and that's what we need. We need to get this stuff straightened out, and we need to get even on the Republican side, we need to get those out that are just doing the same thing as the Democrats, sitting on their hands and getting nothing accomplished.
Well, as familiar as I am with Northeast Ohio, and as you know, Northeast Ohio goes for Trump, then Ohio will go for Trump in 2020, absolutely, positively, as it did in 2016. So I'm all there for you, and we'll keep in touch, and I'll send you the information so you can reach out to the people who will certainly want to go to the polls and help you out.
Only on the John Fredericks Show, Dwayne, can you come on and find somebody that's lived in your area that's got hundreds of contacts to help you. That's why we have this segment, the Disruptor segment. I want to thank you for that. For more information, HennenForOhio2020.com, H-E-N-N-E-N, the number 4Ohio2020.com here on the John Frederick Show. Thank you, Den, for calling in. I also want to say, Dwayne, that Chris Saxman, another one of our listeners, also a host on one of my radio stations, WJFN 100.5 FM, says that pensions are a huge liability. Saxman also says that your district is D plus 7. He looked it up. So my callers actually do my research. So thank you, Saxman. So he says it's D plus 7, and he says it's winnable. So he's saying that you're in a winnable district, Dwayne.
I would agree with that. I mean, there's four districts in Ohio that are kind of tough, and I'm probably the number four, and the number four is probably the most winnable of ones that are held by the Democrats right now, and I think it's definitely winnable. Tim Ryan's been losing a foothold over the last several elections, and people are just getting fed up because, if you don't do something and you're starting to lose a foothold, you better start doing something, and he's just not doing it. He's out there just campaigning, and I think, honestly, his goal is either to try to get in, hey, if one of the Democrats were to win, which they won't, is to get in as, like, you know, whether on a, as a vice president or as a cabinet position, or else setting himself up where he can run for governor here in Ohio, which I don't think he'd win even as governor in Ohio. He just doesn't have a record of really accomplishing anything at all. I mean, I always ask this to anyone that is for him. Well, can you tell me what he's done for our area? Can you tell me what he's done for you personally? And I have yet to hear anyone come up with anything. Other than someone said, well, he got a post office renamed. Okay, well, that's not a lot for the community. You know, that's not a lot for, you know, our area to bring jobs in or to help with the opioid addictions or, you know, anything like that. He's just not accomplishing anything.
Well, it's going to be a very interesting campaign. First thing you got to do is you've got to be the nominee. When is your nomination?
We are in March 3rd of 2020, and I am, like I said, I'm going up against another guy that's he calls himself a liberal Republican, and I have a hard time wrapping my head around that one because to me, a Republican is anything but liberal. So, you know, it's just I always say I'm a conservative Republican. So, you know, it's when you come out and you say and you're actually campaigning that you're a liberal Republican, it means you're hoping you get the Republican ticket and you can swing a lot of the Democrats over so you could win the election. But it doesn't mean you're standing for anything good. So, you know, and I've yet to hear anyone on the Republican side. We were both actually at a Trump birthday party on Saturday. And everyone kept coming up to me, well, why is he here? He's not even he's a Trump supporter. He hates Trump. And, I didn't get it either, but it is what it is. And we'll face off on March 3rd. And I plan on getting the nomination on March 3rd, you know, and going up against Tim Ryan. That's the goal. That's what we're going to kind of focus on right now. And that's what we're going to accomplish. I've been asked, well, why are you getting in the race? You know, what do you think you can win? Well, it's not that I think I can win. I know I can win. Otherwise, I wouldn't be in this. I don't like getting into anything, whether it's business or whatever, unless I know I can win. You know, so you got to look, do the research and say, hey, can we win? And then get to the point that you say, yes, I can win, and just do it.
All right. Tim, I'm sorry, Dwayne Hennen, running for Congress, Ohio's 13th district against Tim Ryan. More information, go to HennenForOhio2020.com. Hey, Dwayne, great to have you with us. Good luck. Stay in touch.
All right. Thank you, John.
John Fredericks Radio Network. That is our Disruptor segment. Meantime, the House GOP wetting their pants once again. Republicans are growing, we understand, according to The Hill, pessimistic about recapturing the House majority next year, and they're pee-peeing down their leg. The typical RNC, Republican, weasels, do-nothing, stand-for-nothing, Goldman Sachs, gangster, bankster, donor bunch are leaking themselves because they're very afraid because Trump's approval ratings in key states might hurt them from taking back the House. Well, they lost the House in 2018 because they didn't stand for anything, and they ran away from the tax cut like the bunch of cowards they are. Now they're afraid, ooh, Trump's approval ratings in these states aren't good, and we might not have power again, and Majority Leader McCarthy, he might not have that nice Speaker's office, and we might not have the power to get more money and get our stuff, and because we're not going to do anything, we don't have repeal and replace, we've not done anything in 50 years except start wars, but we're wetting our pants now because of leaked poll numbers. You know what? Get over yourself. Get over yourself, all of you Republicans out there. Oh, Trump's approval ratings are not good in these battleground states where we have to win all these seats. Get a life and fight. Has this administration taught you nothing? Fight. What do you believe in? Anything? And don't be telling me about liberty. Let's fight for liberty and get the libertarians in, like Justin Amash. No, fight for the economy. Fight to get out of these wars. Fight for something. Oh, I'd rather wet my pants. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. This old Republican Party compared to the Trump movement is like so ridiculous now. I mean, you watch these people in action, And the stark difference is so immense. It's just immense, and they can't even hide now. And all they do is snivel and whine. They lost 2018. One of the reasons they lost it because they ran away from Trump's tax cut. They were all afraid of it. Oh, because CNN is saying that it's bad. It's only for the rich people, and I don't want to really talk about the tax cut. So I'll talk about nonsense like I've been talking about for 40 years. If we only had George W. Bush back, and then we could get into wars and say, you know, you got to be patriotic, and have Sean Hannity say, oh, you're a good patriotic American. Those were the good old days. Unbelievable. I have no sympathy for these people whatsoever. We took the party over, and it's going to take a while to get all new blood in there. If we can get good candidates in these Trump districts, look, they only need 20 seats. And 31 Democrats got elected in districts that Trump won in 2016. They're not going to win if you have a good candidate, and they're going to fight for this stuff. Oh, but there's tariffs, and there's soybeans, and farmers can't sell soybeans to China, and China's, and everybody in the Wall Street Journal, they wrote a nasty editorial about me because I didn't blast the tariffs because they can't sell soybeans, and it's going to be economic Armageddon, and the stock market is going to crash, and you're all going to blame me. Stand up and fight, you bunch of cowards. You know, I'm so sick of these people. The National Republican Congressional Committee, the campaign arm for the House GOP candidates, is the subject of much agitation among conservatives who think Chairman Tom Emmer and his team need to step it up and quickly. They're never going to step it up. They don't stand for anything. And they're afraid of the president because they don't understand his policies. And they just want to go back to the Romney days where it was comfortable, where they could go to Wall Street and beg for money. That's their life. John Frederick's radio network, Truck of Truth Across America. This is the party of Trump. You either get on the train or you're going to get left in the station to perish. I don't really care. I could care less about you. I care about Trump's agenda because it is right for America. Get on board and stop sniveling.
Tonight, Riviera Beach, Florida, is the latest city to pay hackers who took over its computer system.
To pay a ransom amount of approximately 65 bitcoins. Yes.
Its city council voted unanimously to pay a $600,000 ransom to retrieve its records. Some residents are furious there wasn't an adequate backup system.
I don't care if the insurance paid most of the money. You're still using taxpayers' money wrong.
This year, the inspector general here in Chicago warned this city is unprepared for a cyber attack. The big question, if cities are hacked, should they pay up or not? Last year, Atlanta refused to pay about $50,000 in Bitcoin. Baltimore also didn't pay a ransom of about $76,000, even though the attack cost the city more than $18 million. The price of not paying too high for smaller towns, such as Leeds, Alabama, where the mayor decided to pay an $8,000 ransom.
We were devastated. We've got people depending on us to pay our bills.
Federal authorities are now investigating this latest cyber attack in Florida, hoping to stop more cities from being held for ransom. Gabe Gutierrez, NBC News, Chicago.
Hey, NBC News fans, thanks for checking out our YouTube channel. Subscribe by clicking on that button down here and click on any of the videos over here to watch the latest interviews, show highlights, and digital exclusives. Thanks.
You say